When Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance, while observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. Anyone remembers what is this chapter 5 about? What are we discussing in this chapter?
Karma Yoga.
Karma Yoga. Yes? Raga Yoga. How to perform the Karma Yoga. Yes?
It's talking about whether we renounce the work or the...
First there was the argument whether we should renounce the work in order to achieve the transcendental consciousness and be free from reactions, or whether we should work. Krishna concluded that we should work, so he continued to explain this Nishkam Karma Yoga with a complete detachment from the food. One should work with the mind fixed on achieving something superior to simply material life. Yes. Anything else? Yes?
We were to disconnect who is the doer. So the individual's desire and the three modes of material nature and the super soul, all three mixed together form the doer. And Krishna says that I am not the doer. Each individual is responsible for his own desire, and the three modes of material nature help them to fulfill those desires.
So how does it, the super soul sanctions? What was an analogy we heard in this connection? The living entity desires. And what's the next step after the living entity desires?
Material nature fulfills the desires by the sanction of the super soul.
First the super soul, the living entity desires. And there was an analogy that Prabhupada gave, that Krishna gave actually. The flower and the fragrance. That the super soul sits next to the soul as his companion. He sits there. And he understands, he perceives the desires of the soul like one perceives the fragrance of a flower when one is next to the flower. So he perceives those desires and he does not interfere. He has given freedom to all the living entities. So he doesn't interfere. But the thing is that because we are insignificant, we do not have the power to fulfill any of our desires. So Krishna helps us. And he orders the material nature to fulfill our desires, make the circumstances such that we can enjoy what we want. Yes?
In a conditioned state, we don't act. We are being pushed by the Svabhava. This is the green monster.
Yes. Yesterday we studied that at length, how it's an illusion. We think we are controlling anything and we are making decisions and all this, but most of what happens in our life is enacted by the body, it's enacted by the mind, and these two things are completely under cosmic influence, I said. It's under the influence of the totality of material nature. Yes.
So Bhaga is a mixture of present consciousness and past, prototype of past.
Yes, our present nature is a mixture of what we have now and all the things that we have in the past. We gave the example of the lady who was afraid of the fish in the swimming pool. This was impressions from previous life that carry on, and that's why people have inhibitions. That was an inhibition. People have inhibitions, attractions, which are born from previous life's experiences. And we are we are completely under that influence. And what yoga does is to extract us, separate us, because the soul has nothing to do with all this. So yoga helps us. And what did we hear yesterday? We started hearing about the condition of one who is becoming liberated. He doesn't see things in the same way as before. He doesn't think, I am this body. What does he think? I am? He starts understanding his belonging to another place, another substance. I am part and parcel. First of all, he acknowledges the whole, that there is a whole and I am a part. And my body is part of nature and myself, I am part of the transcendence. And we saw how he doesn't identify himself anymore with the body, but he sees the body as a city within which he peacefully resides. And there are doors. How many?
Nine
gates. Through which the soul relates to the external world. So yesterday in the last class we also saw how within the body there is not only the soul, but there is also the super soul. We heard of the Prabhu, one, the soul who thinks himself the master of the city, and then there is Vibhu, the Supreme Lord. So, and that knowledge of the existence of the soul and further of the existence of the super soul is revealed for one who has taken shelter of the spiritual master. So today we are going to hear further about that liberated condition of life. Krishna is going to explain us what it looks like, what it feels like when one is actually no longer under the molds of material nature. This section, we said, is called Liberation by Concentration on the Super Soul. How to achieve liberation and what the mentality of one who is liberated is like. So this was most of the verses, and then towards the end Krishna is going to explain us actually how the karma yogi comes to the realization of the super soul. He doesn't come to the realization of the super soul just through karma yoga. But when he comes to the level of knowledge, he takes shelter of Ashtanga Yoga. And through the techniques of Ashtanga Yoga, then he realizes the super soul. So here, verse 17, Krishna says, Tad buddhayas tad atmanas tad nishtas tad parayana Vachyantya punaravrittim yan nirbhuta karmasham. When one's intelligence, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. So in the previous verse 16, we had seen that one who comes to the point of jnana, the point of knowledge, that knowledge reveals everything. And it said, prakashayati, it reveals, it discloses, tat param, the supreme, discloses the Supreme, something existing beyond our mind, beyond our senses, that is called Param, Tat Param. So then, once one has a sense of that which lies beyond the mind and the senses, then one has to absorb oneself in that. So he says here, we saw that the absorption is gradual. We may engage the absorb our senses in something, we may absorb the mind, we may absorb the intelligence. So we have to absorb our complete self in that transcendence. So here it says tat, that's referring to that previous one, tat param, that supreme. So one who engages, fixes one's buddhi, intelligence in the supreme, Atmanas, one who fixes the mind in the Supreme, Tad Nishtas, one whose faith is completely fixed in that Supreme, completely giving up any other objects where one may be taking shelter, and one is Tad Parayana, one is completely fixed and is has taken complete shelter, complete refuge in the Supreme, then all doubts are removed. And one becomes eligible to proceed on the path of factual liberation. Prabhupada says, a Krishna conscious person can thoroughly understand that there is duality, simultaneous identity and individuality in Krishna. And equipped with such transcendental knowledge, one can make steady progress on the path of liberation. So there are different phases of realization of the Supreme. And when people go through the gradual path of self-realization, then the first phase which is achieved is the realization of Brahman. Now one actually enters into a different atmosphere where there is no form, but there is no misery, and there's a sense of eternity and so on. But one has to proceed further, as we heard in Sri Upanishad, if you remember in verse 15, what was in verse 15? Hiranmayena patrena, this is a Brahman. Hiranmayena patrena satyasya apihitam mukham, that your face, he said, is covered by the effulgence which emanates from your transcendental body. So the yogi prays, please remove that. Remove that this effulgence so that I can see your face. So this all, of course, depends on the knowledge which we acquire. Some people get stuck with only the knowledge of Brahman. And some people get stuck with the knowledge of Paramatma. But the most fortunate, Prabhupada says, is the one who goes up to the realization of Bhagavan, who becomes Krishna conscious, and understand that even though Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, they are called Advayam, that is a non-dual, they are on a non-dual platform. But within that non-dual platform, which is beyond the duality of this material world, there is variety. And Krishna is one, it is a fact, he is one. Everything is part of him. So in that sense, the Absolute is one. But there is individuality also. And there is identity, which means that there will be one and there will be many. And especially it means there are two. There is the self and there is the super self. And both, even though they are one is an expansion of the other. But at the same time, because of the principle of identity and individuality, they can relate to each other. So this is the highest knowledge. And one who comes to that highest knowledge is the highest yogi. In verse 18, we heard of the vision of one whose mind is fixed in the Supreme, and actually whether the Supreme is considered as Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Any of these three transcendental visions are going to be manifested in this kind of vision of the world. When we see the world, we see so many different objects. And we relate those objects to ourselves. What we can do with those objects, how much we are attracted to those objects, what is the danger from those objects. We relate all the objects to ourselves. And we see only the external aspect of the objects. We see the color, we see the form. This is what we see. But this is not the vision of one who has achieved transcendence. So his vision is as follows. This is a very famous verse. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavihastini shuni cheva sapakecha pandita samadakshinaha. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. You have ever met dog eaters? Never met dog eater? Yes? Yes. When I was small in France, I remember my parents were talking of those horrible people who eat dogs. Usually people who are poor are little raw, you know. There are people like that in the whole world. They catch, they kill the dogs. Huh?
In China
we heard
so beautiful dog and they eat them.
In Vietnam, where you come from, in Thailand, Vietnam. No, you don't see that. Yes. In Nagaland, in India. Where?
Manipur.
In Manipur, yeah, the same area in Nagaland, Manipur, they eat the dogs. So, of course, when we think of eating dogs, we feel alone. Because we are, for a long time, vegetarians, we cannot imagine. But, yes. So a dog eater, that means very low class person. Now we hear in some countries, they eat not only dogs, they eat cockroaches.
Cockroach?
In China. That's the place for culinary variety.
What are the
wasps?
I've seen
Philippines.
I never
wasps.
Mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes. Yeah. Right?
They just take out from the drains. I had a colleague in.
And chipmunks are like snakes.
So everyone is nice and disgusted.
Mother, chipmunks are also taking.
Chipkili. Oh, my God. So, and because we do not have a transcendental vision, right now we feel disgusted, right? We feel disgusted because, oh my God, this, we cannot even think about it. Rupini is ready to faint. We cannot even think about it. Right? So this... What are all these different varieties? The brahmana, the cow, the elephant, the dog eater. These are all living entities. And within each of these bodies, there is a living entity, there is a soul. And according to the karma, in previous lives, the living entity has acquired a different kind of body. And each body has a specific food, a specific place to sleep, etc. So, but the Krishna conscious person, he does not see. He sees. He can see the different bodies, but that's not the only thing he sees. He understands, he sees the soul. He sees the soul inside. First of all, he doesn't see these different kinds, different varieties of animals and objects in relationship to himself. He sees them in relationship to the Supreme. So he understands that each and every person is a spirit soul, and according to how that spirit soul is related to the super soul, accordingly it got a different body. When one has been very obedient to the laws of nature, to the laws of the Shastra, then he has developed the effulgent body of a Brahmana. And when one has been misusing his independence and free will, then unfortunately he has been degraded by the laws of nature and became a dog. And you can see the dog eater is considered even lower than the dog. So he sees like that. The bodies are material productions of different modes of material nature. But the soul and the super soul within the body are of the same spiritual quality. So therefore he remains, he has an equal vision. Because the differences are external. As far as the inner part, all the souls are the same. And the super soul is one. The similarity in the quality of the soul and the super soul, however, does not make them equal in quantity, for the individual soul is present only in that particular body, whereas the Paramatma is present in each and every body. A Krishna conscious person has full knowledge of this, and therefore is truly learned and has equal vision. The similar characteristics of the soul and super soul are that they are both conscious, eternal and blissful. But the difference is that the individual soul is conscious within the limited jurisdiction of the body, whereas the super soul is conscious of all bodies. The super soul is present in all bodies without distinction. So the super soul himself doesn't make any distinction. It's not because somebody has become a pig that the super soul says, well, sorry, I'm not coming. The super soul does not make any distinctions. He bestows his mercy upon all. So one who achieved the transcendental position, his nature becomes like the nature of the super soul. Prabhupada is comparing the two. He becomes super conscious. And due to that transcendental consciousness, he also doesn't make a difference between the different people. He just sees that they are spiritual in essence. And that we'll see later that awakens in his heart the desire to connect them all to the super soul. So this kind of vision, we said, is achieved by all the transcendentalists. And they see things differently. The Brahmavadi, what does he see? Oh, they are all Brahman. Therefore, they are all equal. They are all Brahmana. The yogi, what does he see? Paramatma, everywhere. He says, in all the different bodies, there is Paramatma. And the devotee, what does he say?
It's
a part and parcel of Krishna. He's Krishna's servant. He sees everyone as Krishna's servant, whether it's a family member or someone that he doesn't know. He knows that he's Krishna's servant. And because he is Krishna's servant, should be respected, should be served. So this vision of oneness, oh, I had a nice quote, I think I forgot it. This vision of oneness will bring the devotee, as far as the devotee is concerned, because of this vision of oneness, the devotee will be drawn to being compassionate and to try to bring everyone to this transcendental state of consciousness. So some qualities, other qualities besides this equal vision, here the verse says that Vidya, so of course he has the high transcendental knowledge, and Vinaya. Vinaya means
humility.
That it's not that by achieving that vision one becomes suddenly proud of being superior to everybody, because it is a superior vision. It's a superior vision, but if it is directed properly under the guidance of a spiritual master, it doesn't make one proud. And indeed, in order to achieve the highest realization, which is the realization of Bhagavan, then humility is the key. Sometimes the Brahmavadis, or those who realize the impersonal Brahman, they become a little proud. As soon as we get knowledge, if the knowledge is immature, then there is a little feeling of superiority. But that only means, if that feeling of superiority is there, it only means that our knowledge is immature. Sometimes we get some complaints that devotees who go for Bhakti Shastri in Mayapur, in Vrindavan, or whether they do their Bhakti Shastri, some of them become little proud. They puff up little bit. Because they have the sense that I know, now I know something, I know. And you don't know. But this is very incomplete knowledge. If this sense of pride comes, it means that it's very theoretical knowledge and there is no realization about that knowledge. Because as soon as one realizes the knowledge, then immediately humility comes. Because to realize means to realize oneself as an insignificant part of the whole. To realize one's helplessness in the face of material nature. And to realize one's full dependence on the Supreme. So that is real knowledge. And that feeling brings humility. And because of humility, a sage never feels himself superior to others. One time Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture. Maybe I told you that story. I've told so many stories. I think it was in France. It was in Europe. Prabhupada was giving a lecture and he was explaining Varnashram. So he was explaining the different classes and how, you know, the Brahmins are the most elevated of the four Varnas and how the Sannyasis are the most elevated of the four Ashrams. And they are the guides of the other sections and so on and so on. And Prabhupada was making all these presentations on the four Varnas, the four Ashrams. And then in the end of the lecture, one very arrogant person came and he said, if I have understood well, the Brahmins are the ones who teach and they are the ones who give the knowledge, and the sannyasis are the ones who are renounced. And if one can be both a Brahmin and a sannyasi, he is the top. He's somebody who is at the top of the human society. And you said that this means that he is first class and the others are third class, second class, fourth class. So then the man was so proud and so arrogant, and he said, so, which class do you belong? He was asking Prabhupada. And the intent was, I suppose, because you're sitting there, and you have your sannyasi dress, you have your Brahminic mode of occupation, so I suppose you think yourself first class. So he was talking like this to Prabhupada, all the devotees were boiling, and they were about to jump on him and cut his throat, and Prabhupada was there. And Prabhupada reacted in a way that was unexpected. What was the way he reacted? Some tears started rolling from his eyes. And Prabhupada said, I am fifth class because I serve all the other classes. This is the position of the self-realized. So this is this here, Vidyam Vinaya Sankalpe. Not because he has achieved the greatest knowledge that he goes around bossing everybody and thinking himself God. If he has really realized the knowledge, then the first thing he will do is become the servant of everyone. So this is the position of Paramahansa. That was very beautiful in Prabhupada's reaction. And he meant it. Not that he was faking it. He had tears in his eyes. And his life is an example of that. Maybe we can think of some other example. How Srila Prabhupada saw in this way, Samadarshi. How did he see everyone equally? In what ways can we understand that Srila Prabhupada had that vision of seeing everyone equally? Can you give some examples? Could we? When he came to the West, he was willing? He gave initiation to women. Okay, that was one of his. Yeah, that Prabhupada was very equal minded, he had an equal vision. Yes. He gave initiation to the women. Not only gave them initiation, but he gave them ashrams to reside in. He elevated them to the position of Brahmins, gave them Brahminical initiations. While all the smartas in India were like, ah, it's gonna be. But Prabhupada saw, how can I reject them? They have come to me and they want to serve Krishna. How can I send them away? So he saw the soul inside. What else? In which other ways did Prabhupada see everyone equally?
There was one incident when Prabhupada was in early days living in a class in New York, and a hippie just walked in and changed the toilet roll and went out. So everyone was quite disturbed by that. The Prabhupada said, see, everyone was to serve. So you know, he wasn't seeing him from the angle that he just walked in and walked down.
Yes. He was seeing any service that people would render, and he was ready to take it. And that hippie means some dragged out person, a zombie who doesn't know what he's doing, can't keep cleanliness, intoxicated person, came in during the class and gave Srila Prabhupada a roll of toilet paper as a contribution. This Prabhupada had said, you can do service, you can bring things for the service of Krishna. So he brought the roll of toilet paper. But Prabhupada, so equally, whether somebody has brought $1,000 or somebody has brought a roll of toilet paper, Prabhupada took. This is the soul's service. The soul is serving. So he saw the service. Yes. How else did Prabhupada see equally? Yes?
In Mayapur, there was this celebration that all the disciples came to meet Prabhupada and they wanted to show him that because of the book distribution that they collected a large amount of money, so much money that they brought this pile of dollar bills and they placed in front of Prabhupada, thinking that Prabhupada will be very happy because they brought so much money. And at the same time, one little girl, she came and gave 2 rupees that she had from her home. And when she gave, Prabhupada had tears in his eyes that she gave more than what the disciples collected, thousands of dollars, because they were all eager, thinking that he will appreciate them because they brought such a big bargain.
So he was not allured by the external amounts of service. He could see the intention inside, that one really with pure heart has come and given 2 rupees, and Prabhupada took the pure heart. And the others, somehow, of course, initially they wanted to please him, but some little contamination got on the way, some competition, some things, and they became proud that we have collected so much. And so they came. Prabhupada could not appreciate that. Very nice. Yes. Anything else?
Once there was a feast, big feast, and Prabhupada was there. And at the backyard, the prasadam was one of the pots where the dog came and started licking them. And it was a pot from where Prabhupada was supposed to get the food. So where everybody was wondering what to do now. So when Prabhupada asked where the prasadam, and he said, sorry Prabhupada, it's not, you know, like, I don't eat that. Then he came, he asked the youth, and they said, it's okay, he's part of us, he can have that prasadam. So he didn't even know that.
Yes, sometimes Prabhupada was very amazing. I told you one time the story of the bag that he asked to be put on the flower. He was in his room, and his servant had been asked, don't let anybody in. No, that there are 2 stories. One is the bird and one is the mouse. I told you the story of the mouse. That Prabhupada had forbidden everybody to... It was forbidden that anyone should enter his room. And the servant was staying outside, and after some time he heard talks inside the room. So he was wondering, did I let anybody in? Is there a second door that I didn't know of? So he came closer, and through the window he saw that Prabhupada was talking and talking, and he was shaking his finger and he was talking and talking away. He was preaching. So the servant came in and he saw that there is nobody inside the room. And then when he actually looked well, there was a mouse on the other side of the room. And Prabhupada was talking to the mouse, and what he was saying was, look at what you have done. Look at the kind of situation you've put yourself in. All this because you didn't want to serve Krishna. And he was raving at the mouse. And another time he called his servant, ding, 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 ding. And the servant ran in and said, yes, Prabhupada, what can I do? He bent his obeisances. He said, yes, what can I do? And Prabhupada said, you see, down there, there is a bug. There is a bug. So he was looking everywhere. Where is the bug? Oh yeah, there is a bug. So he was practically ready to just pushed back away. And Prabhupada said, take him. He has been here for a long time and he is not moving. I think he is hungry. You take the bag and put him on a maha flower. That was Prabhupada's vision. He took the bag. He looked, he was concerned. What is this bug doing there? Since long time and he's not moving. There's something wrong with him. Because bugs usually they move. So put him on the maha flower. So that means he was concerned about the soul inside. Because he didn't say just put him in the garden. He said put him on the maha flower. That he will smell and he will eat the maha flower, and he will become liberated. So that was Prabhupada's vision. The way Srila Prabhupada went to the Western countries and preached there, that was a proof of his equal vision. That somehow or other, he preached far away from India. And many people objected when he came back with his disciples. But Srila Prabhupada understood any person in the human form of life, if given the right knowledge, can achieve the highest truth. That was his vision. Equal vision. So now 1920. We continue to hear about the Jivan Mukta. The Jivan Mukta, one who is liberated, even though still living in this body. Ihevate dasargo yesham samyestitam manaha nirdosham hi samam brahma tasma brahmanikestita. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahma, and thus they are already situated in Brahma. So one of the symptoms of the liberated condition is this sameness and equanimity, seeing everything on the same platform. This is the vision of one whose mind is fixed on the Brahman. Here it says, Brahmani te sthitaha. They are fixed in the Brahman, in the Supreme. And of course that Brahman is ultimately the Supreme Lord. And that they are flawless, and how they become flawless means they are beyond all the defects. We heard that there are many defects. There are four defects, if you remember, four defects of the conditioned souls, that they are
cheating
and
illusion.
The senses are imperfect. And they commit mistakes. So, and we said that the Vedas are perfect because they are not created, not given by a person who is conditioned. They are called apaurusheya. They come from the divine platform. So on the divine platform of the Brahma, there is no fault. And when the devotee concentrates on the Brahma, well, he achieves that same condition of flawlessness. The Lord is flawless because he is without attraction or hatred. That's what it means here. Sameness and equanimity. Meaning there is no attraction, there is no repulsion. So this is beyond karma and this is beyond jnana. So we said the karmis, they are attracted. And the jnanis, they're revulsed. So one achieves a condition beyond this. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction or hatred, he also becomes flawless and eligible to enter into the spiritual sky. Such persons are to be considered already liberated, and their symptoms are described below. So, we should focus on Lord Vishnu, we should focus on the Vibhu, on the Supreme, more and more and more and more. And by doing that, attraction as well as repulsion in regards to the material objects will diminish. And how it diminishes, we are going to hear that in 22. But now we have more symptoms. Na prarishye priyam prapya, no vijay prapya chatriyam, sthirodhira samudho, brahmavish brahmanistitana. A person who neither rejoices upon achieving something pleasant, nor laments upon obtaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, who is undiluted, and who knows the science of God, is already situated in transcendence. So these are the symptoms of the self-reliant soul. Not illusion. So what means not illusion? Doesn't identify with the material body. This becomes so clear. There is a complete disidentification from the material body. And because of that, I mean, all the miseries of material existence, they are due to that identification. All the attraction is due to that identification. All the repulsion, when we don't like something, we don't want something, it's all based on this bodily identification. When we are no longer bodily conscious, then all these things are gone. Whenever somebody who is in the bodily consciousness receives something, like we were talking, Prabhupada received a huge stack of dollars. So a mundane person who is completely identified with the body would rejoice, thinking, wow, all what I can do with this. I can go on holiday to the Bahamas. I can do so many things with this money. But if one is not the body, then what's the use of all that money? The soul cannot use that money. So there is no happiness, meaning in the sense of an happiness of expectation, expecting some joy to be drawn from the things that we receive from this world. And similarly, if something is taken away, it will hurt one who is identified, but it's not going to hurt somebody who is self-realized, because he doesn't depend on anything. Prabhupada says he's self-intelligent. He's contained within himself and is completely independent from the outer world. This steadiness of mind is called sthir buddhi, self-intelligence or fixed intelligence. And this happens when we know our constitutional position. Again, the situation of the person who is liberated here, verse 21. By Hasvashresta Saktatma Vinadhyatmaniya Sukham Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. So, how come that person is not attracted? How come he is not attracted to material sense pleasure?
Because
of the higher taste. There is some other pleasure which comes from fixing the mind and the intelligence on the Supreme. So initially, the yogi uses his intelligence to reject sense gratification. And he seeks pleasure in contacting the internal part. Here it says bhaya sparsha. You remember this word sparsha? We saw that in
matra
sparsha sumanteya. So whatever happiness and distress, they are born from contact with the sense objects. And this contact with the sense object is called bhaya. Bhaya means external. So instead of keeping himself in contact with the external world, he keeps himself in contact with the Supreme, which is within. And thus doing, he enjoys vindatyat mayat sukham. He enjoys happiness. And the more he concentrates on the Supreme, the more happiness comes. And he enters Brahma Yoga, the communion of the consciousness of the individual soul with the consciousness of the Supreme. Prabhupada explains, a person is in Brahma Yoga or Krishna consciousness is so absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he loses his taste for material sense pleasure altogether. The highest pleasure in terms of matter is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell, and a materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which he avoids. That is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. So it's removed from the happiness generated by the senses. And the greatest proof of someone who is actually in touch with the Supreme is that this greatest source of happiness in the world, which is sex enjoyment, the person who is transcendentally situated has absolutely nothing to do with that. Very naturally. And this is considered the topmost pleasure in the whole world. Greater than the pleasure of eating. Those who are in the tamogun, they take happiness in sleeping. And those in rajagun, they take happiness in other things, in eating, in talking, in seeing places, doing things, conquering. But nothing is greater than this. Prabhupada was explaining that the great king goes all over the continent and he conquers so many other kings, and his fame grows and grows, and he becomes a big emperor. But when he returns to his mahal, when he returns to his palace, then he puts his crown at the feet of the queen. And there he is conquered. He is conquered by this very force of nature. So, this is a real proof, Prabhupada always said, a real proof of spiritual advancement is when the sex urge diminishes. And when one is able to, first of all, consciously reject the proposals that are constantly coming from the outer world or from the mind, when one begins the path of liberation, then one takes shelter. As soon as these thoughts come in the mind, one immediately takes shelter in Krishna. One takes shelter in service, one takes shelter in the spiritual master. One prays. And if one does that, then gradually, this most powerful force is going to somehow vanish and stay at bay. So this is the test, Prabhupada said, in spiritual realization. Because as long as we find ourselves very self-realized, we have very high thoughts, we have very so many things. But if we fall under this, then it means that it's all theory. Yukta Manana means that we are liberated only in our dream. We think ourselves liberated. We think ourselves transcendental, but we are not. Because the symptom of one who has achieved transcendence is, first of all, that he is free from sex attractions. Prabhupada has given again the example of Yamunacharya. Unconcerned, it has no value. Yeah, it has no value. Why it has no value? Because of the pleasure which is experienced within, to be embraced by the Supreme Lord in a loving relationship, that makes one forget anything, any relationship of the material world. And we should be seeking that embrace of the Lord. We should be seeking that meeting with the Lord through His holy name, through His darshan, through His service. We should be seeking that. And only one whose mind is fixed on searching from this contact, it's called Brahma Sparsha. We will see this further in Bhagavad Gita. There is Mata Sparsha and there is Brahma Sparsha. One who is eager to come in contact with the Lord Himself, that person is saved from the attraction of material objects. So, even though we always say that there's, one has to come gradually to the point of being free from sex life, at the same time, it shouldn't be too gradual. Because too gradual means that we may never reach Krishna. So it has to be gradual, but in an intelligent way, because Prabhupada makes it clear that spiritual realization and sex pleasure, they do not go together. I think we will study that in the next verse. Whenever we engage in sense gratification, we identify with the body. And when we identify with the body, we tighten the knot which is between the matter and spirit. There's a knot between matter and spirit. And every time we remain away from self-gratification, the knot is being loosened. And every time we fall under self-gratification of any kind, the knot is being tightened. And once it gets more and more and more tight, we are helpless. So 22. The realized soul realizes that sensual desires are foolish. Sense activity, to engage in sense activity for the sake of deriving some material pleasure, it's completely foolish. So this is what he's saying here. Yeni samsparsha jahoga dukkha nirunaya eva te adhyam ilamanta kaunteya nate shuravate buddha. So buddha is the opposite of mudha. There is mudha and there is buddha. Mudha is the foolish, the one who is like the ass, the materialist. And the Buddha, that is the intelligent person, the spiritualist. So such person, na ramate, he does not take his enjoyment in samsparshaja bhoga, in the enjoyment which is born from contact of the material objects. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery. This is how he sees. A material enjoyment is what? Source of misery. This is a completely different vision, right? When we think of pizza, I don't know, I always think of pizza. I don't think that it's a source of misery. So an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which stand for sensual pleasures, which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. That's quite a meditation. So, why are sensual pleasures foolish? Why are they foolish? They are temporary, that's one thing. It says here, adi antavanta, meaning they have a beginning and they have an end. We can't keep it. We can never keep it. So why endeavor for something that you will lose anyway? Dukkha yonaha. They create suffering. Which kind of suffering?
Bondage.
Bondage. Yes. And it's also bringing rebirth. You engage in all these sense activities, you create karma, and all you desire things. If only I could get this, if only I could get that, if only I could this, if only I could that. And we send these desires into the ether. And they don't vanish, they don't disappear. They are fixed in our consciousness. If only this, if only that, if only this, if only that. So then what happens? Because there are so many seeds of material activities, then at the time of death, oh, if only this, if only that, if only this, if only that. And at the time of death, then we take on another body. And in that body we have some of the things that we had desired before, but not all the things. Therefore we keep thinking, if only this, if only that. I'm just this close to eternal happiness. If only I had one more pair of shoes. If only I had any little thing in the world, then I would be complete. But it's never like this. So, they are temporary, they create rebirth, they create suffering, they are insignificant compared to spiritual pleasure. But as long as we haven't experienced spiritual pleasure, we cannot compare. That's why, you know, one of the important aspects of Krishna consciousness is kirtan and absorption in hearing and absorption in chanting japa. All these things, they give immediate impressions of something different. When we chant attentively, when we sit in kirtan, we do get a pleasure which is higher than self-gratification. And then Prabhupada in the purport, he says, Kashtam kaman arhate vidbujam ye, very famous preaching. These are available to the stool eaters. Whatever we desire, it's available to the stool eaters. You don't have to get a human life to get that. Here in Vrindavan, actually they have, I think they have killed the pigs recently because there were so many more pigs. But in Vrindavan, the villages in India, you can see the pigs. What do they do all day? That's their language, you know. So they can talk. And then they prefer the sewer. As black the water, the more the pigs come around. And they lie in the sewage water that you can't even, you can hardly see it, you can't smell it, it's so terrible. And they are lying in the sewer water and they are just, they're happy. It's cool. It's merged with all the, you know, the disintegrated mud and stool, and so it's smooth like a beauty cream. And they are there, and Prabhupada said, if you give them the choice between the fresh halwa and the fresh stool, guess which one they choose? India is very good for self-realization. It's very, very good because you see the things. In Western countries, they're like, what's wrong with the things? Because in the West, the things, they are pink. They're pink. Pink. They're pink in color and white hair. And, you know, they have a little funny tail in the end. And usually, they're small and a little bit cute. And usually they are reproduced as toys for the children. Yeah. Even they make boxes in the form of pigs with a hole to put the money. It's a dan patra. So they have all these things with pigs. Nobody understood because they have lost contact with material nature by living in the cities. So they have no idea what is actually the nature of a pig. Although when if someone wants to insult another, he may tell him, you're a pig. Which means there is a negative connotation to the pig. But here in India, when you go in the villages, it's actually dangerous. People get killed by pigs. You know why? How they get killed by the pigs? Because in the morning, they go to pastoral in the fields. Right? They go to pastoral in the fields. And the pigs come. And they get the guy out of the way to get the stool. It is very... So Prabhupada says, what pleasure you want? And then Prabhupada was saying, so the example of Indra, he had become a pig. And he was lying there with his piggy wife. And he had all these piggy children. And you see the little piggies, you know, they are after the mother. And the mother is full of affection for her little kiddies. And they suck the milk. And this is life. So this is a very crude example. Of course, when we are a little, you know, when we are still in the bodily concept of life, we come out. Human family life is not like that. But the vision of the transcendentalist is that he sees the commonality. He says, come on, if it's available at that level, when you are in human life, do something else. Human life is not meant for lower pleasures. It is meant for higher vision, higher destination. So, Prabhupada says, the more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries. So, the entrapment, meaning that, as we said, this contact with the material object in the mood of enjoyment, it makes us identify with the body and it tightens the knot. We become more and more and more identified. So the problem is not that we experience material pleasure. Everyone has to eat and so on. But it's when we go too much into sensual activities and we become addicted. The materialists are addicted. They cannot leave without anything. They have to have their enjoyment. They cannot leave without it. So therefore we can understand that they are completely bound. Now, the result of tolerating sense desires. Text 23. The result of tolerating sense desires. Shaknoti eva yashokam prapsharira vimokshya kama krodho dhavam vegam sayukta sasukhinaha. So everyone is looking for happiness. But sukhi naraha, the real happy person, is not the one who enjoys in this world. Before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. So this describes the Buddha, the intelligent person. He tolerates the urges. He must tolerate the urges. Where are they coming from, these urges? Kama, krodha, udbhavam. They come from lust and anger, which means there is attraction and there is repulsion. And from these two currents come the vegas. Which vegas? Prabhupada says, vacho vegam, manasa, krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaro pasta vegam. The six vegas. The forces of talk. Yesterday we talked of the Gujarati ladies. This is the forces of talk. The forces of anger. The forces of the mind, all the desires, all the mind takes us for a ride and makes us think about this, about that. The forces of the stomach, hunger, cannot resist. I haven't had my lunch. I can't hear anymore. I can't hear. Why I can't hear? My brain has gone into the stomach. So this is the urges on the stomach. The forces of the genitals, which drive the whole world, and the forces of the tongue. The belly is full, but the tongue says, one more gulab jamun, just a little bit more sweet rice, just a little bit more, just a little bit more. So this is different from Udara Vega. This is the Jiva Vega. Belly is full, but the tongue is never full. Just wait 15 minutes, it sets down, and then you can take it and more. When I joined, we used to do that when there were big festivals. We used to eat. I remember a huge plate of so much mahaprasada. And they would serve and serve and serve. And we were new devotees, so it was like, oh, ananda, ananda. The pakoras and the sabjis and the fried cheese. It was like more, 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 and we were just, no, I can't. But then would come the second, in the end, they would wait for the end, when everybody was done, then they would come with the sweets. And we were like, what to do? I didn't know there were going to be sweets. And it was not one sweet, it was 10 sweets, a variety. So many kinds of sweets. And so you would just ask for a second plate or clean up the first plate, and then you would just pile it up. You would pile up, make a little fountain in the middle with the sweet rice, and then put all the things around. There was the cake and the gulab jamuns and the And then what we would do, and you remember when telling Bhaktivedanta and such peace, then what we would do, so we would just take a little 15 minutes, 20 minutes, we would just wait a little bit. Because in youth, the fire of digestion is very powerful. So within 20 minutes, half an hour already, some space vacant in the stomach, and then very happily we would just go for the sweets, and that's how we became devotees. So this is the advantage of Bhakti Yoga. Otherwise, in the sannyasi's ashram, in the Mayavadi department, you don't get that. Kitchen without salt. And old rice also. So no attraction. So these Vegas, they are based on the mind. First, the mind is the reservoir of all kinds of desires, images, imaginations, daydreaming. And then from the subtle platform comes the urges of the senses. And we know very well that, we will hear this in chapter 8, that whatever we remember at the time of death, that we will attain. So therefore, one who is intelligent, he controls, he tolerates the urges of the material senses and checks the forces of the mind. When does he do that?
Now.
We heard this as soon as possible.
In the beginning.
From the very beginning. But here it says something else. And before the end. So we have a lifetime to practice this tolerance. But we should succeed in tolerating the mind and the senses when?
Before the end.
It says, before giving up this present body. Otherwise, if we have not developed that tolerance at the time of leaving the body, then it will take us into the womb of another mother, hopefully a beautiful Vaishnavi. But who knows? It's dangerous. So, this also means, there's another meaning to that. Before giving up his present body, so it means we have to tolerate and we have to conquer these urges before the time of death so that we are not drawn to another birth. But this also means up to the time of death, which means that we should expect that these urges are going to drive us nuts until we are old. Not that because we're becoming old, now all these sense urges are going to withdraw. No! Because the mind never grows old. So we must endeavor to tolerate them. We cannot think, oh, it will go. It will pass. It will go with time. No, it will not go with time. It will go with our endeavor to control the senses and the mind through the intelligence. It will go with our endeavor to concentrate on our service. So such person who can control the mind and senses while still living is called Sukhi Naraha, which stands as another word for Goswami. And this is the second quality of the spiritual master. We have seen he is situated in knowledge, so he also controls his senses. If one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. One must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger. So this is our real work in Krishna consciousness. Focus on Krishna and, you know, restrain these forces of nature. Engage them to some extent and restrain them. Now, how to conquer the senses, anger, desire? Yonta sukonta aramas tatanta jyotire vayaha sayogi brahmane varangha bhuto diyachati. So this conquest is done by experiencing the happiness within. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within. So active, not outside, inside. Meaning in relation to the Supreme. And whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. So the stage which is to be achieved is called Brahma Bhuta. He achieves, one controls the urges, he achieves a stage which is called Brahma Bhuta, the platform of Brahman, which is undisturbed from attraction and repulsion. And from that Brahma Bhuta platform, then he will enter Brahma Nirvanam. Brahma Nirvanam Adi Gacchati. He will enter the Brahma Nirvana. And we heard already before what means Nirvanam. It means liberation from all suffering, a state beyond the material world. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can therefore sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities from within. So Prabhupada said, the Supreme Lord is also known as Brahma, the giver of pleasure. So the devotees, they derive their pleasure from their service to Krishna. This is called Brahma Bhuta. And for the here there is Anta Sukha, Anta Arama, meaning that there is the pleasure within. And then there is Anta Jyoti, which means there is internal vision. Because nowadays when we close our eyes, what do we see? you see anything? When you close your eyes, what do you see? Don't know? You see God?
No.
You see light.
You see light?
You see light.
You should all start on the sweet of maturity. This is light. Good. What do others see when you close your eyes?
We are at
you dream. What do we see when we close our eyes?
The tasks that have to be completed.
You see so many thoughts and all these. Okay? Anyone else see something else?
Something.
When we close the eyes? What do we see?
Suffering.
Nothing? Yeah, funny. When we close the eyes, we see darkness. This is the realization. You close your eyes, you see darkness. That's the darkness of ignorance. We are surrounded by the darkness of ignorance. And within that darkness, as you said, there are reflections, some images are projected in the darkness, so many little, but they are not real light. So self-realization means that when you close your light, your eyes, you see what? Antar Jyoti, there is a light within. There's a light within. So this is for those who are on the level of Brahma Buddha, which obviously we are not. We haven't even seen the darkness.
It's true.
It's good. The darkness is beyond all these flashes of different ideas and all. Beyond that there's a darkness, but the mind is still, you see the darkness. You understand, you are surrounded by darkness. You are within the body, right? We are within the body, and it's all darkness around.
But see, I have a question. This anger arises because of unfulfilled material desires and anything else as well?
It's unfulfilled, it's frustration because we can't enjoy. And even the jnanis, they are full of that because they suppress. It's unfulfillment of the desires, and it also arises from unengagement of the senses. You know, those who choose the path of inaction, instead of engaging the senses as we do in Krishna's service and purifying them in that way, they just withdraw, you know. But because if they are not at the level of goodness, then there is all this massive pressure inside due to the gunas, you know, the lower gunas. So there's a big pressure and it comes out in anger. So it is frustration. It comes from tamas. I mean, they say it comes, it's a rajo guna. It's come from rajas, and when it manifests, it is mixed with tamas. That's why anger is destruction. Destruction means tamas. But Prabhupada again, now he's going to give us the true picture of a transcendentalist. It's not someone who does nothing. Even though there is all this realization, at the same time, in text 25, he says that such person is active. Labhante brahma nirvanam visaya kshina karma shaha chinna vedhaya tatmana sarva bhuta hite rataha. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose mind are engaged within, who are always was busy working for the welfare of all living entities, living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. So, 25, more characteristics here. So he experiences pleasure within after having achieved Brahma Nirvana, but it's not that he stays idle. First of all, once there has been a glimpse of the transcendental state, all doubts are destroyed. And the conviction becomes very strong. So there is jnana and there is vijnana. So this is the state of realization. And the convictions become very, very strong. No more doubts. So what does such person do? Sarva bhuta hite rataha. They are always busy. Those who are sages, they are free from sins. And part of sin is to always want to exploit others. Take more than one's quota. And it's the same. So they are free from sin. They are beyond duality. They are free from doubts. They are engaged within. They may be doing so many things, but their focus is their spiritual realization. So to such person, do welfare work for all, sarva bhuta, all the living entities, and hita. Hita means welfare, benefit. They work. Rataha means busy. Like we had the Veda, the Rataha. Some are busy in the words of the Vedas. They sing, they chant the Vedas, they do this. Veda, Vada, Rataha. But no realization. So this one is busy for the welfare of others. And that doesn't mean material welfare here, that he will start opening some hospital or something, no. This refers such a person who is completely in peace, he wants others to also come to that platform. Srila Prabhupada clarifies what this word hita means. First of all, that this Brahma Bhuta is arrived to by Krishna consciousness. And those who practice, I mean, it is arrived at by different kinds of transcendentalists, but one in Krishna consciousness, who is the type of yogi that Krishna wants us to become, so he is a devotee, and therefore he preaches for the benefit of others. He knows what is ignorance. He has seen the darkness. He has seen the misery. And now he knows the way out. He knows there is something else. And he knows how to get there. So what he will do? He will teach others. He will try to awaken that consciousness in others. Srila Prabhupada says, to act, to revive this consciousness within the entire human society is the highest welfare work. This is called paropakara. Upakara means to do good work for others, and transcendental good work for others. A Krishna conscious person has no doubt about the supremacy of Krishna. He has no doubt because he's completely free from all sins. That is the state of divine love. Is free from enmity towards Krishna. So then, Krishna explains that this realization is sure to come for one who endeavors with consistency, one who strenuously tries to attain the Supreme, who tolerates failure and keeps going. But it may take some time. Abhitaha, there is a word here called abhitaha, is assured in the near future. So it may take some time, but it will come. Kama krodha vimuktanam yatinam yatachetasa habito brahma nirvanam vartate itatmanam. Those who are free from anger and all material miseries, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the Supreme in the very near future. And Prabhupada says, the success is assured very soon, especially for the devotees. And Prabhupada explains in the future, in the Prabhupada, even great sages are not able to control the forces of the senses as effectively as those who are engaged in transcendental bliss by serving the lotus feet of the Lord. And why is that? It's because the devotees, they get help from the Lord. They are not alone. And Srila Prabhupada gives three very beautiful and revealing examples. By vision, by meditation, and by touch only do the fish, the tortoise, and the birds maintain their offspring. Similarly do I also, O Padmaja. This is Krishna speaking to Padmaja, who is Lord Brahma, born from the lotus. So what is this? The Lord nourishes the devotees. He nourishes the devotion. He nourishes the bhakti in the devotees. It's not just a question of lone endeavor. Pushnanti. Pushti means nourishment. The Lord nourishes the devotees. And in this way they grow. And they grow very fast. So, the fish. What is the example of the fish? How does the fish bring out its progeny? First of all, the fish produces some kind of eggs. And it's in the water. So once the eggs are out of the fish, how is the fish? The fish, it's not that the fish goes away. Even though the fish cannot do anything with the eggs. Why? He doesn't have any senses, hardly the fish. He doesn't have any hands to do anything. He doesn't have any feet. He doesn't have any senses to really take care of the eggs. And the body of a fish is cold. So he cannot even give some warmth to these eggs. So what does he do? He stays around and he looks. He understands, see the Dehatma Buddhi, that this has come out of me, that's mine. He stays around the eggs and he just looks. And we should not think that nothing is happening. There is a subtle contact which is there between the small fish and the mother fish. And similarly, what is there? The tortoise brings its offsprings. That's it. The fish, the tortoise, and the birds. So the tortoise by meditation. Why is that? Because the tortoise, there are some kinds of tortoise, the big tortoises, those who live in the sea. When it is the time to deliver their eggs, they go on the land and they make big, big holes with their paws, their legs. They go, they dig the ground, they make big, big holes, and there they put their eggs. And then they come out and they cover everything, and because they cannot live on the land, that's not their environment. Because they are, what do you call, amphibious? Amphibians. They live on the land and in the water. So they live in the water, but they have to breathe from the air. And when they produce their children, the eggs cannot, because they need to breathe, so they cannot be put in the water. They have to be put on the land. So the mother comes and puts the eggs there, and then she leaves. Where do you think she goes? She's in the water, not very far, and she's thinking, remembering, my eggs are there. It's thinking. And the birds, by touch, the birds, they sit on the eggs, and by generates heat, and then the babies come out. So, similarly, the devotee in Krishna consciousness, although far away from the Lord's abode, understand this example, can elevate himself to that abode simply by thinking of Him constantly, by engagement in Krishna consciousness. So what happens here is that the devotee thinks of the Lord. The devotee serves the Lord. And what does the Lord do? He reciprocates how? He also thinks of the devotee. As we think of him, he also thinks of us. Om Kratosmara Kritam Smara, Kratosmara Kritam Smara. Please remember me. Please remember what I have done for you. Please remember. So the idea is that not only we endeavor to remember the Lord, but when we apply our consciousness to Him, His consciousness is drawn to ours. And He thinks of us. And when He thinks of us, we are nourished. The Lord sustains our emotion. King Shula Shekhar also said that. That please remember me. If there is one thing you can do for me, my Lord, that anugraha. He said, Madjanmana phalamidam madhu ketavare. And then what? What did he? He said, if there is one thing that you can do for me, oh my Lord, is you please remember me. That's all what I want. You remember. You remember. Who am I? Then he said, Tvat Bhritya Bhritya Parichara Bhritya Bhritya. I am the servant of 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 your servant. This is me. Please remember me. Which servant I am? Do you have so many servants in the spiritual world? I am one of them. Please remember me. I have fallen into this ocean. Please take me back. So, this state of life is called Brahma Nirvana. Absence of material misery is due to being constantly immersed in the Supreme. So this is very beautiful. Sparsham kritva bhavirvayam shakshus chevantare dhugo pranaparam samam kritva nasam yantaracharino yatendriya manogutiram nir moksha parayana vigate chavaya krodha yasada mukta evasa. So now it is explained in these two verses, how one can actually get that realization. And initially, specifically, the realization of the Brahman and specifically the realization of the Paramatma. And it is when the Jnani or the Karma Yogi who has come to the level of knowledge, who has become a person in knowledge, he takes up Ashtanga Yoga. This is what is described here. It's a sort of introduction to the next chapter. Such person who has come to the point of conceiving of liberation. We have heard all, you know, the details. Such a person who has come to that point, he has the qualities he can enter into the realm of Ashtanga Yoga. So what is it here? What does he do then? Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows. You are practicing?
Yes.
Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows. The Indian has his eyes closed and he's trying to see between the two eyebrows. Suspending the inward and outward breath within the nostrils. He doesn't breathe further than the nostrils. Because when you take in air, you power the senses. We studied that before. So he doesn't want to power the senses. And thus controlling the mind, senses and intelligence. The transcendentalist aiming at liberation becomes free from desire, fear, and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. So you should recognize here, Vigate cha bhaya krodho. You remember these three? Again, they are coming. Icha bhaya krodha. So this is the transcendentalist here. How one attains liberation. How one begins the practice of Ashtanga Yoga. Now, Srila Prabhupada, of course, in the purport, he refers to the Bhakti Yogi, who comes to the same point of realizing the Brahman. When one is well situated in devotional service, so well situated in devotional service, see this level of Paramatma realization, the level of Ashtanga Yoga, it corresponds in bhakti more or less, it begins with the level of nishtha. It cannot, this kind of realization cannot be attempted unless one has achieved at least steadiness of the mind, particularly steadiness in not just in service, but steadiness in the emotions, steadiness in the mind. So well situated in devotional service means nishtha and beyond. One comes to the transcendental position. So in bhakti, the transcendental position is the level of bhava. Qualified to feel, you see, bhava, to feel. To feel the presence of the Lord. And where does one feel the presence of the Lord? The Ashtanga Yogi feels the presence of the Lord inside. In fact, he doesn't feel, he sees. He sees the Chaturbhuja Paramatma within his heart. But the devotee, to him, the realization of the Lord comes in a different way. How does it come? He feels the presence of the Lord in the sphere of his service. He can understand how the Lord is moving things around him, and he can perceive the presence that now he has given me the garden, and he has given me this intelligence. He has given me those thoughts. He has brought that person to me. And the more the devotee advances, the more the devotee actually feels the personal presence. It seems just like there is only a slight curtain. The Lord is almost visible to an advanced devotee. And indeed, to the very advanced devotee, he becomes visible. This particular position is called liberation in the stream. So, then Prabhupada explains, of course, all this practice of Ashtanga Yoga. By practice of such yoga, one is able to gain control over the senses, refrain from outward sense object, and thus prepare oneself for liberation. This yoga process helps one become free from all kinds of fear and anger, and thus feel the presence of the super soul in the transcendental situation. And then conclusion. In other words, Krishna consciousness is easier. So this conclusion you will read throughout the purports in Ashtanga Yoga. Because Ashtanga is tricky, because you know it's very tempting, because you see the Lord, but it's very difficult. This is a better way of controlling the senses than by Ashtanga Yoga, just engaging Krishna's service. Now in text 29, which is the last text in this chapter, Krishna reveals himself as the goal of all these transcendentalists. Bhoktaram yajnatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhuktaram yatva mamshantim ruchati. Srila Prabhupada often called this the peace formula, because one reaches peace when he understands Krishna to be the goal of all activities, whether they are yajna, bhoktaram. Bhoktaram means I am the enjoyer, the enjoyer. One sees Krishna as the enjoyer of yajna and the lord of all planets, this is the karma yogi. He is the goal of the karma yogis. One sees Krishna as the goal of tapasa, this is the jnani. For the jnani is also, he is the goal of the tapasya of the jnani. He is the goal of the yajnas. And suhridam sarvabhutanam, he is the goal of the yogis who find him in their hearts. A person in full Krishna consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the supreme lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So Krishna actually reveals himself here. Lord Krishna is the beneficiary of all human activities. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. Unless one understands these bare facts, it is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. We must understand that there is a Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of all the planets, and he should be the goal of all of our endeavors. And he is our well-wisher. He is Suhridam. Suhridam means the closest to our heart. We cannot have a friend who is closer to us than Krishna. Because other friends, at least there is a body difference. We are not in the same body. We can be very close with somebody, but there is always a difference between the two. But with Krishna, it's a very intimate relationship. It's very incredible that actually we are one, but we are two also. And he knows us from top to bottom. He just knows everything about us. We cannot hide anything. Therefore, we have to, this elevates us to a complete position of non-duplicity and purity. And as long as we are not pure and non-duplicitous, we cannot relate with him. Because, you know, if we know that our friend is cheating us, what kind of friend is he? We're not going to be very intimate with somebody who says one thing to us and thinks another thing. So we have to become completely favorable to Krishna so that, you know, we come together. As long as he is in contact with matter, he has to execute work in terms of material necessities. Krishna consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life. So here, I missed one line. Srila Prabhupada in his purport finally reveals, you know, all the way we have been struggling with this karma yoga and bhakti yoga. Should I do bhakti yoga? Or is it karma yoga? Are they both the same? So here Prabhupada makes it clear. The question of mental speculation as to how karma yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. To work in Krishna consciousness is to work with the complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. But I'm not sure this was the quote I was looking for. I'm sorry for that. Direct Krishna consciousness is Bhakti Yoga, and Jnana Yoga is a path leading to Bhakti Yoga. Krishna consciousness needs to work in full knowledge of one's relationship to the Supreme Absolute, and the perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna and knowing oneself as a servant. So the idea is that Karma Yoga gives liberation, or rather realization of the soul. It brings us to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. But if we want to go further and actually explore the levels of transcendence, then we have to take up either Ashtanga Yoga or Krishna consciousness. Simply by Karma Yoga, it's not going to take us all the way to the platform of self-realization. So this was the conclusion of this chapter here. Krishna is the center, he's the beneficiary, and we should... Sorry? Yes. We will study that in the sixth chapter. Prabhupada makes many parallels between Krishna consciousness and Ashtanga Yoga. Many, many parallels. So thank you very much.